Get ready to rock. Radio.
John, could you tell us about when you first started playing guitar? I think I'm right in saying that you started, you know, like most guitarists, most professional guitarists, you know, you started at an early age. But when did you think you could actually make a living out of it?
Well, that was when we first we were in a rock band competition in Sweden, and that was broadcasted on TV, and this was in '82, and it was like 4,000 bands that was, you know, involved in this, and we won that competition, and the prize was to record an album. So we did the first Europe album, and after that, we did a tour on that one, and then it kind of just, that's when I started, you know, make a living of it. So I've been doing it since, professionally, I should say, since '82.
Right.
The album
right.
came out in February, 23rd, because I remember this in '83 because it's my birthday, so that's why I remember it. Otherwise, I usually never remember the date. So I've been doing it ever since, professionally. So,
but before that, you were, I think you sort of went through a bit of a punk phase, didn't you? This was probably when you were in your sort of mid-teens, I suppose, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in 77, 78. For one year, I was a punk rocker.
Only for 1 year, though.
That was just around the time when Sex Pistols and Clash and those bands came out, and I really liked those bands a lot. So I was totally into that, and Ramones, and you know. So, and I still like that stuff, especially Sex Pistols. You know, when you listen to that stuff today, it's very, you know, it's rock basically.
Yes, you can certainly get the energy levels of it, can't you? You know, was it popular in Scandinavia?
Oh, yeah. Mm. It was very big here.
Yes.
And Sex Pistols, they came over here and played live and stuff. Unfortunately, I missed that show because I was in the hospital at the time. So I missed it. I was a real troublemaker when I was younger, so I was always in trouble all the time. So I've been in the hospital, I don't know how many times. And my mom was a nervous wreck.
Okay.
But I calmed down a lot since then. I started getting into bands like UFO and Lizzy and Deep Purple, and actually I was into those bands before the punk thing came along too, you know, but not as much as later on. So I was very lucky that my mom at the time was in a relationship with a guy that had that worked at record companies. He always brought home albums all the time, and so check this out. And he worked at CBS Records in the 70s, so he brought home No Heavy Petting with a UFO, and then I was just totally hooked on that. You know, I started like playing along to that album a lot, and you know, learning all the Michael Schenker solos and things like that. You know?
Oh, right.
So that's really when I started getting into the solo bit, because in the beginning I was only playing rhythms, like, you know, playing, you know, like Elvis stuff, you know, things that my mom had at home. Then I discovered, you know, like Made in Japan, and I was very much into Ritchie Blackmore and that.
Yeah. Now, what about learning the guitar? I mean, were you self-taught? Did you have lessons?
No, never had any lessons.
Ah.
Just very, very ambitious and very stubborn when I was younger. And I just kept doing it, you know, over and over again. I could not put it down, the guitar. I was just totally obsessed with it. So I just kept playing and every day, and just playing along with albums and stuff like that. And so that's how it just came about, and just watching, you know, rock shows on TV and things like that. I can't read music or anything like that, but I noticed at a very early age that I had a very good ear. I usually picked up stuff really quickly. I used to play along to the UFO live album, Strangers in the Night. You know, it's like every day I would just keep going and going and going, and you know, and after a pretty short while there, I started picking up. I mean, I started learning the whole album, every solo that Michael Schenker did on that album, you know. And so, yeah, that's how it started. It's just, you know, just very just very into it, you know. I was just the only thing I was thinking about day and night, you know, just playing guitar all the time. So
get ready to rock radio.
John, the docking gig was probably quite different to what you'd experienced before, and I can understand it must have been a great experience because you were touring widely with the band. And of course, they were still, and they still are a major name, but certainly at that time, you know, on the back of the George Lynch episode, you know, they were still a major name touring in the 1990s. So, I mean, did you enjoy that aspect, or did that get a bit tiring after a while?
No, I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. We had a great time doing that tour after the album came out and everything. It was great. And also, I got to... And we had such a great band. We had such a great live band, you know, and with Peter Baltus on bass from Accept, Mickey D on drums, which is, you know, in Motorhead now.
Oh, yes.
Been in Motorhead for forever. And, well, at least probably 15 years now or something, you know, something like that. Anyways, so, and also there was another guitar player, Billy White, who was from Texas, which was really cool. I thought we could get to do some, you know, a lot of harmony stuff together.
Mm.
Being a Lizzie freak, that was just perfect, you know. So it was a great tour. We had a lot of fun on that tour.
And actually, I was looking at, I've got, just as an aside, I've got a CD of the Dokken album. You mentioned it, actually, which was Long Way Home.
Yeah.
Now, there's tour dates on the cover of this, as they do, you know, they put on a sticker. And
yeah.
This is actually May 2002. I don't know whether you, I mean, it's probably about the right time. Do you remember?
It was around that time we did the tour.
Well, the reason I'm sort of particularly interested, it was only a few dates actually in the UK, you know.
We didn't do many there.
You didn't?
I think it was only, what can it be, like 3, 4, 5, maybe something like
yes.
that?
Yes. But
I only remember one of them, and actually I remember two of them. Two of them I remember. So it wasn't that many days in the UK, no. We did one in London, which was a tiny little place. I think it's called Underworld.
You're exactly right, John. You've got a good memory. Yeah.
And then we did the Cavern Club in Liverpool.
Now, that's the one that I'm particularly interested in, because that's not very far from where I live, you know, and it's like a local venue. And blimey, you know, when you look back on gigs you've missed. Because that must have been quite interesting for you, Liverpool, and
with
all the
great
musical
connections. It was, you know, just being there for the first time too. It was just like walking around the city and stuff, and all this Beatles memorabilia, is that how you call it? Yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah.
You had with John Lennon Street and whatever, all that stuff, and just being in the same place as the Beatles were playing. You know, the Cavern Club was. Great, even though it's been rebuilt and everything.
Yes, that's right.
But you know, I just remember that Mick Brown, you know, because he's a huge Beatles fan, you know, the drummer in Dokken.
Yeah.
He just he walked up on stage, which was the stage that the Beatles played on, because it was like right next to it, you know. It was like they had the old one and the new one, the rebuilt one, and so he just walked up there and it's like, oh man, I just got to stand here with Ringo, you know. Ringo was standing here, you know, in the 60s and stuff. And then he walked off that little stage, and then he's like, oh, I have to get back up there again. So it was just kind of funny, still there, you know.
Yes.
You know, one of his idols. You know?
Oh, this is quite unique, that. Now, on the last tour with Dokken, I think I've read somewhere that you injured your hand.
That was just some thing that Don Dokken pulled, you know.
Ah.
Because I said... that when we were in Gothenburg, kind of like the end of the tour, I think it was only like 3 or 4 gigs left. And then after that, it was going to be an American tour, like festivals and things like that. And about that time, I was so tired of it, you know. I was just getting sick of it again. And, well, you know, Don is not the easiest person to work with, you know.
Mm.
I mean, I always said this about Don. He has a heart of gold and head of wood. So, you know, he means well, you know, but he's very moody, you know. He's very up and down all the time, and just traveling with him all the time, and with his moodiness and all this stuff, and he's just like, you know, he did a lot of weird stuff, you know, and And so I said, so I had a meeting with him. I said, like, well, I don't think this is no fun anymore, you know. I think I'm just going to leave and do something else now. And he was quite upset. So so he didn't want me to even finish the last 2, 3, 4 gigs. That was on the European tour. So because he was so upset, you know. So I said, well, I finished the tour. I said, of course, you know, but I won't go to America. But he didn't even want that. He just wanted me to just kind of leave right there and then. Because he has his pride, you know. You know, he cannot. I couldn't just say, well, I'll finish the tour and then I'm off. But he has to kind of finish it right then. Well, if you're not going to continue and do the American tour, then you just might as well just end it right here. So I think I just did one show after the Gothenburg thing, and then I left, and then brought this, and they called up this Italian guy, which I can't remember the name of. So he came in the band and finished the last 3 or 4 shows in Europe. You know. So, but I was just glad to get out of there at the time, because it was just too much. I've been doing it for a year, and with the recording and the writing and everything, and it was no fun anymore. It's just, Don can be very difficult to work with.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, we've had a lot of great times together too. You know, we had a lot of fun, especially on that tour we did in 97, 98. That one was great, and the first one we did in 91, 92 was also really, really good. You know, people change, you know, a little bit, and sometimes it just doesn't work out, you know. That's the way it goes. But at the same time, I didn't feel like I was going to stay forever there anyways, you know. So so that's what happened. So he just came up with this story, like, well, he's injured his hand, and so it was just...
Just to give an explanation, really, I suppose. Yeah.
Get ready to rock, radio.
Now, let's conclude our chat, John, by asking you a bit more about your guitar playing. Because I have to say, really, that you're not a household name, really, when it comes to guitar heroes. In terms of, like, people who are starting out playing the guitar, I mean, the fact is that you need to be discovered by people, and then when people discover you, they realise just what a fantastic player you are. Now, I've heard, I mean, and this is first-hand, I mean, for instance, the Amott brothers from Arch Enemy, they refer to you as an influence, and many other bands do, and it seems almost that you're fellow professionals recognize this more than the listener, really, because you know, do you agree with that?
Oh yeah, totally, you know, and that's it doesn't bother me at all, you know. I mean, when it's great when other guitar players come up, like Doug Aldrich, Red Beach, and Michael Adam and people like that, Michael Schenker and people, they come up to me and say, man, you play great. It's like, wow. It's like Doug Aldrich said a couple of weeks ago, he said when we did a show with them, he said, man, John, you sounded great. Well, you almost sounded too good. I don't even want to go up there. So that makes you feel good.
Yes.
Great. But obviously, I mean, it would be great, you know, the Europe fans that knows about Europe, they, of course, they know about my playing and everything. But like I said, you know, I'm not a household name like Eddie Van Halen or Richie Blackmore or something like that, you know. But I think it also had a lot to do with maybe that guitar hero thing, just kind of. When Nirvana came along, you know, it just kind of, that thing just took over, and it wasn't not supposed to be anymore guitar heroes or guitar solos or anything like that, you know. So it's kind of, you know, that's maybe kind of where I had my chance to get out to, you know, to the mainstream, so to speak. But it never bothers me, you know. I first of all, I just like to be happy with my playing, just to please myself.
Yes.
For a start, you know, it might sound kind of egotistical, but that's, and then when other people like it, then it's just the icing on the cake, you know. So that's great. But yeah, so I guess I'm a little bit kind of an underground hero, you know.
But I think
which is kind of cool.
Yes.
Know, in a way.
Well, I think your time is actually going to come, because I think Europe are getting more exposure now with the sort of the, since the, you know, 2004. I think possibly also, you know, thinking about it, when you were playing in Europe, you were getting, you know, in the days when you had that massive commercial success. I mean, as you say, you know, you mentioned bubblegum, and it was sort of pop rock, really. Pomp rock, I think people call it.
Yeah.
And I just wonder whether perhaps people miss the fact that you were such a splendid sort of soloist. And it sort of takes time for people to catch up with it, really, because I think, because I'm sure you'll tell me, John, that you probably think you're playing better than you ever did. Would you say that?
I mean, right now,
Yeah.
It's way better than it was in the 80s, for sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the stuff I did in the 80s was all right, but that stuff I can do in my sleep now, you know. Now
yes.
I have new challenges, and I feel like I'm still learning all the time, and that's what's so much fun about it. You never fully learned, you know. You always can improve and get better and better all the time. It's that kind of thing. It's that kind of instrument, you know. So it's a great thing, you know. I mean, I just keep working on it all the time and coming up with new stuff. But even though it's very based on the blues, obviously, but you know, I still think it's very important to have good melodies in a guitar solo and in songs. So I always try to keep it very melodic and not just try to impress anybody by just being flashy or something like that. You know?
Which, of course, you can be if you want to be, you know.
Yeah. I think it has more impact if you just do it once in a while instead of doing it all the time. Then it gets a little more exciting, just like, wow, that it happens, you know, here and there in the songs, and so, because I get very tired of this shred guitar plays really quick, you know. It's just like, oh man, here we go again, you know. It just sounds like they're doing some kind of exercise or something, you know. A lot of it, you know, it's just really boring to listen to. So the guitar plays that I really like and have influenced me are usually not, you know, shredders or really fast plays at all. They always play with a lot of feeling and play with heart and soul, you know.
Yes.
Which was Richard Blackmore and Michael Schenker and Gary Moore and people like that, you know. Even though they can be super fast and super flashy, they just do it when it feels like it's right to do it, you know. That's always what I liked, you know.
Because I think what I find with you playing, I first saw you playing live quite recently, actually. It's when you toured the UK early in 2007. And you opened the tour in Liverpool, you know, mentioned the Cavern. This is one of my local gigs here. And I'd already heard the albums, and you were promoting Secret Society. But I have to say, John, that of all the guitarists I've seen recently, and I suppose I'm talking the last 10 years maybe, I was just wanting those solos. You know, the songs are great. You know, the Europe songs, I'm sure people have said this to you. But when you crank in with your soloing, it's so well constructed and melodic. And how many bands can you say that, really? It's like you never put a foot wrong, really.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that. Yeah, that's always been my thing. You know, that's always been my style and my goal. And I always thought that, you know, if the solo doesn't have some kind of melody to it and things, then it's just not that exciting, you know. So Europe has always been a very melodic band, and so I always try to think of good melodies that kind of goes along with the vocals and stuff, and then I put a couple of fast runs in here and there, you know. But I also done songs where I'm just burning from the beginning to the end too, if the song needs it, you know.
Yes,
if it feels right, then I do it, you know. So
it's all very tastefully done.
It all depends on what the song needs and what fits the song. That's the most important thing. But I always, like I said, I always wanted to try to, you know, put in some cool melodies in there, you know.
Yeah. Now, some guitarists have popularized themselves through, you know, instructional videos, and especially via the internet these days. But you don't seem to have done that, John. I mean, have you ever released any sort of guitar tuition video, or do you do workshops at all?
No, I never done that.
Ah.
I've gotten, they ask me a bunch of times to do it.
Yes.
I mean, a young guitar in Japan wanted me to do one. I said, like, I'm not really into that kind of thing. I mean, I look at Michael Schenker, I look at Van Halen, I look at Richie Blackmore. They never done one. And Gary Moore has never done one. I think I'm more in that category, you know. I can't really sit there and explain a lot of things either, because it just happened at the moment. It just happened at, obviously the melodies and everything are usually worked out in advance, but some of the other stuff I don't want to analyze it too much.
You know? Oh, I know, yeah.
I can't sit down and say, look at this, I can show you this scale and all that stuff, and it's like, it's just boring to me.
Oh, no, I know. You just like making the music, really. And it is time-consuming, yeah. That, isn't it? You know, it's you usually find also that the best teachers aren't necessarily the best players, are they, really?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know.
This is true. I don't know. I never gotten into that that thing, you know. And even when I've seen and watched the instructional videos by other guitar players, I just kind of just watch it for like 10 minutes and I just turn it off. It's just boring to me, you know. Hi, here I'm going to show you a pentatonic scale. Here's the slow version. Here's the speed up version. It's like, oh man, this is not what I want to do. You know, there's so many videos out there, so the kids can learn from other guitarists.
Yes.
Because I don't know what else to do than that has already been done thousands of times. You know, you only have that many notes on the guitar. You know, so. And so many scales, so it's, you know, I've seen, like I said, a bunch of instructional videos in the past. It's a very, very long time ago, but it just seemed to be kind of repeats of the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
Here's a pentatonic scale, and here's a mixolydian scale, and here's a diminished scale, and it's like, well, Yngwie did that when he was 17 years old, you know.
Yeah, it's out there, isn't it? That's what you're saying, really, but...
Yeah.
I think the other thing, I mean, as you're talking, John, what I'm thinking is that what you can't really teach, I suppose, you can teach all the technical stuff, but,
yeah.
I mean, basically tone and actual feel, and, you know, that's just individual, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
it's and really, whilst you can hear your influences in a number of different players, you know, you know, at the end of the day, it's you, isn't it? And it's something you can't really... probably teach at the end of the day, you know.
You can approximate
it, you know, but...
Yeah, I mean, I believe that the tone is in your fingers. You know? I mean, you just sound the way you sound, you know. I mean, it's... to me, having a good vibrato and a great tone is very important. And, you know, I think everybody pretty much... Everybody sounds different just because of the way they touch the string and how hard they hit the string and stuff like that. So, I kind of just do what I do, and I'm happy with that. It's just this is the way I am, and this is the way I sound, and just I can hear it's me playing, and that's always a good thing, you know.
Yes.
And other people can too. So, so obviously you're going to hear the influences in there, but I also hear influences when I listen to Gary Moore. I hear a lot of, you know, Peter Green, early Peter Green, and even though when he was playing the Strat, a lot of Jeff Beck, and so even those guys have, you know, learned from other players before them. Still you hear that, you know, it's still different, you know, just the way the touch and the tone of the fingers and the way to put the emotion and everything into it. So.
And you practice a lot, John, you know, are you quite obsessive about practice or you know?
Yeah. You know, I in the past I used to do it for like, you know, all day long and all night long. Now when I have children, I don't have that much time to do it. But when he's at school in the daytime, my son Jake Thomas, when he's at school in the daytime, I usually try to put a couple of hours in there every day. I kept messing around with different guitars and different amps and, you know, trying out different pickups and stuff. I love doing that. Try to improve the tone and the sound, and I'm always trying new things out, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I love taking guitars apart and put them back together with all that kind of stuff. So I got a big toolbox here that I pretty much use almost every day.
Yes, oh, that sounds great. The Europe album, which you have mentioned, and it comes out hopefully around about September, October.
And the new album, Last Look at Eden, too, is very good and very guitar oriented, and and kind of have really cool guitar riffs and stuff. So, and the keyboard has gotten a little bit more space now on the new album because our keyboard player Mick McKelly, he was, you know, you can't even hear him on Start from the Dark, you know. He was getting kind of a little bit frustrated, and so we added a little more keyboards on Secret Society, and now I think he's even a little bit more up in the front. But just the sounds that he's using now is so much better than it was in the 80s. And so it works out really good. You know, he used more of the distorted Hammond organ kind of thing. And, you know, in the 80s it was more like the synthesizers, which I was never too happy with.
Yes. Because, of course, they can actually date the sound, can't they? That's the other thing. I mean, it's you hear it and you think, oh, that's the 80s. So. So basically, if listeners like the last two albums, they're going to like this one, aren't they? Last Look at Eden.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It doesn't deviate too much from that template that you set up in 2004.
I think this is the best sounding one we've done so far too. The sound on it is just incredible. It's just really totally blown away when I got the CD and listened to it, and it's like, wow, this is really, really cool. And you hear, I mean, you, like I said before, you hear a lot of our earlier influences now, like, you know, more like, it's more bluesy, a little bit like early Whitesnake, Deep Purple, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And then you also hear some you know, like bands, like we like Audioslave a lot. You know, that's one of our favorite newer bands. So we also had the first Audioslave as a reference. You know, when we mixed this album, we kept listening back to it because we love the sound of that thing. You know, so it's kind of going more a little bit more in that style. But you know, but as soon as Joey sings and then you hear that it's Europe, and so it's not like we try to copy anybody else now. You know, we are.
You've got your own sound.
Yeah, we got our own sound. You know, so.
Now, what about producer of the new album? Who's producing it?
His name is Tobias Lindell.
Ah, right.
I don't know how to say that in English. Tobias.
Could be Tobias. Yeah, yeah.
Tobias Lindell.
Have you used him before, John?
No, this is the first time actually. He's one of those newcomers. He's really good. He co-produced it with us. The thing that he's most famous for here in Sweden, anyway, is that he's actually got a Grammy for, and is the band Mustache. It's kind of a funny name. They're a really good band, and they're very big here in Sweden and Scandinavia. But I don't know how they do it outside. I'm not sure, but they have done. You know, they got Grammys for the best new band and the best new album and stuff like that last year. So our management they knew this guy, and they just kind of contacted him and asked him if he was interested in doing a Europe album. He was very into it, and he knew about our other albums that we've done since the reunion and stuff. So it worked out really good. He's really, really good, really good guy, and a really good engineer too as well.
Oh, that's good, because I mean, he's working with guys who are so experienced. I mean, you produced your own albums, and you've obviously got a really great idea about how you want it to sound. So it must be quite an interesting process, that, mustn't it, when someone comes in and... I suppose you do get a different perception, don't you, a different perspective?
Yeah, you know, we wanted to bring some new blood in, and he's only 34 years old, so the first thing I was thinking when they mentioned him was like, no, he's way too young, you know. I mean, I've done like over 30 albums, and now how many has he done, like 5?
Yes.
Like, I don't want to have some kid here producing me when I've done so much cassettes and
exactly.
Produced so much stuff myself.
Yeah.
So it was never a question of that he was going to do it by himself. So it actually says produced by Tobias and Europe.
And Europe, that's right.
So it's a co-producing thing. So we all have, you know, put our stuff in there, you know. So.
Yes.
But I actually, he came up with, he had some really new, fresh ideas, and, you know, he was really good.
Get ready to rock radio.
You're working on a solo album.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's been done for a long time. Done for about a year.
Yeah.
Then we had a tragedy in the family.
I understand that fully. Yes, yes.
So I just put that aside, you know, a long time, because I just didn't feel like doing anything. So
no,
now it's all ready to come out any day now. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I suppose you've got to be a bit careful, haven't you, that it doesn't clash with the Europe release. It's all timing, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I don't know what the plan is right now for Mascot. They haven't given me a release date now, but everything is done. The cover is done and all that stuff. So it's a really cool cover too. You know, the album's going to call, because it's a very bluesy album. So it's going to be called the Play Yard Blues, and it's also one of the songs on the album. And it's actually my son, which is he's 4 years old now. It's him and me on the cover jamming together, playing guitar together.
Do you think he's going to be another John Norum?
Well,
people must ask you that, really.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope that he has shows a lot of interest in guitar playing right now. He has three guitars right now. He has one acoustic guitar and one like the miniature Les Paul, which was given to me in Japan when we were there on tour and stuff. That's the Les Paul he has on the cover, and so he shows a lot of interest, and he's always sitting around, you know, playing. But obviously, I mean, his fingers, he's only 4 years old, so, you know, he's having a hard time reaching stuff. But, you know, he's getting it down, so he's, because he got it from me and from his mom too, so he has in his genes, you know.
Well, look, John, all the very best with this new album, and we'll be watching your solo album with interest as well when that comes out.
Thank you, appreciate it very much.
And thank you for talking to Get Ready to Rock.
All right, thanks a lot, I appreciate it, thank you.